From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Ghostly Stories with Rosemary Ellen Diley. Get ready for that. Hey, congratulations to the San Francisco Giants, this year's World Series champs, defeating a tough Kansas City Royals team. A final game tonight, 3-2. Here's what's happening. A man beheaded a woman in her Long Island, New York apartment. Jeez, and then dragged the body and head out onto the street where onlookers initially thought, hey, we're just watching a macabre Halloween prank. No, no, no. The suspected killer then jumped in front of a commuter train. And guess what? He's dead. Police said the woman appeared to be in her 60s while the killer appeared to be in his 30s. Jeez. State Department has quietly made plans to bring Ebola-infected doctors and medical aides to the United States for treatment, according to an internal department document that argued that the only way to get other countries to send medical teams to West Africa is to promise that the U.S. will be the world's medical backstop. Do we need that? Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has ordered all military personnel returning from Ebola response missions in West Africa to be kept in 21-day quarantine. Fiat Chrysler, they are recalling 381,000 Ram trucks, mostly in the United States, to correct a potential fire hazard. Chrysler said in a statement that problems with 2010 to 14 Ram 2500 and 3500 pickups and the 4500 and 5500 chassis cabs equipped with the Cummins diesel engines could cause fuel heater housings to overheat and the fuel to leak. That's not good. I'll tell you what else is not good. Drinking a lot of milk. Drinking a few half-pint glasses of milk every day does nothing to lower the chance of suffering broken bones, according to research, and can make the risk of an early death more likely. The study leaders said further research is needed before any dietary changes are recommended, but they fear the effects of high levels of lactose and other things found in milk are to blame. These sugars can increase stress and inflammation in the body. Let's check in with Dr. John McDougall. He is, of course, the author of The Starch Solution. John, so I stopped drinking milk years ago, but tell me, what do you think of this study?
Well, I think it should serve as one more arrow in the quiver that people use to stop this type of eating behavior in their families. I think drinking milk is one of the most dangerous things that the American public can do. You know, we've been knowing that for years, though, George. I mean, we used to blame saturated fat and cholesterol that's found in milk for the high incidence of heart disease and strokes. And then, oh, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, Cleveland Clinic came out with another theory, and they said, well, it's the trimethylamine that's present in dairy products that poisons the artery, and that's how you get heart attacks. Now, these researchers in the British Medical Journal, they say, no, it's the milk sugar, part of the sugar called galactose, that is so toxic to the blood vessels in the body, causes inflammation that you give heart attacks. Hey, let's face it, drinking cow's milk is not for people. This is a food designed to grow a calf from 60 pounds to 600 pounds. What do you think happens to people when they drink cow's milk?
I got you. You know, so dairy farmers, John, dairy farmers are not going to like this study, but I guess that's the way it is, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of like if we were doing a radio show and we were talking about tobacco, and tobacco farmers called up and said, you know, I'm trying to put my kids through college and pay for the car, and you're talking about tobacco as being a poison for the public. Well, excuse me, George, and the rest of the listeners. Dairy products, and we're talking about milk and cheese and so on, they are known to cause heart disease and obesity and type 2 diabetes and lactose intolerance, and they're the number one cause of food allergy. This is just one more bit of information that should cause the worldwide public to pause and say, you know, this is really stupid to be drinking the milk of a cow. This could kill me. This is bizarre behavior. This is what the scientists have been telling us for 100 years, that doing this will make people sick. So, yeah, I applaud the article. I don't know whether I can go for the explanation that it's the milk sugar or part of the sugar galactose that's the culprit, but who cares? You know, they're pointing one more arrow at milk and say, look, folks, you shouldn't be drinking it. And George, if there was one thing that I would tell you or any of my patients, if they came to me and they said, you know, I'm going to give up one category of food, should it be meat, including beef and pork chops, or should it be dairy, including milk and cheese and yogurt? Hey, go for the dairy group. Give up the dairy group. It's just as bad as meat. In fact, I call dairy liquid meat. But the problem is with dairy, people eat it guiltlessly. They think this is health food. So they sit down to a block of cheese and they go, oh boy, calcium. They should sit and look at that block of cheese and go, my goodness, that could clog my arteries and give me a heart attack and kill me. And anyways, it's really bizarre. I'm glad the article came out, and I hope it gets a lot of attention. I know the dairy is coming back and trying to spin the facts another direction. But folks, stand up, protect your kids, protect your spouses. This stuff is bad for you.
I'm giving this article to all my grandchildren and my daughters and my son so they can have it. Well, where once there were 15, now more than 1,000 giant tortoises lumber around the area of the Galapagos Islands. After 40 years of work reintroducing captive animals, a detailed study of the island's ecosystem has confirmed it has a stable breeding population. The numbers had dwindled drastically by the 1960s, but now the danger of extinction appears to have passed. When a rocket contracted by NASA burst into flames seconds after liftoff, as we reported yesterday, its supplies for the International Space Station simply disappeared in an orange fireball. The explosion also swallowed several experiments, many of them from schools. The bad news, of course, everything in the rocket, gone. The good news, if there is any, no deaths or injuries reported. Space historian Robert Zimmerman with us. Robert, I haven't heard of a rocket explosion like this in years. What's going on?
Well, actually, George, there have been explosions like this. Russians have had a few of these the last 2 years with their Proton rocket. They had one in July that was absolutely spectacular, where just seconds after launch, the thing started to go wild all over the place. You know, the joke is, it's rocket science. And that's what it is. You know, trying to confine that much energy and have it come out of a nozzle in a manner that, you know, is controlled, this is difficult stuff. And we don't know yet what happened with the Antares rocket when it blew up yesterday. There are suspicions. NASA and Orbital Sciences, the company, has just done its first assessment of the launch pad. And this was good news. The amount of damage to the launch pad is not that significant. And that's really good because, you know, you lose the rocket, but you're already building another rocket, so you just figure out what's wrong and you correct them. But if you lose the launch pad, you got to rebuild that. And so they won't have to rebuild it, just do some repairs. Rocket science is hard stuff. This is going to happen in the future. It has happened in the past. If we expect our rockets not to blow up ever, then we might as well sit home and never do anything. It's dangerous. That's the bottom line.
Track Robert Zimmerman, his website, behindtheblack.com. Well, it's time to have a little fun pre-Halloween, so tonight we're going to devote the entire evening to talking about some exciting horror films and some spooky things, and later on, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us as we talk about some hauntings and ghosts. But in a moment, Mr. Lobo back on Coast to Coast as we talk about cinema insomnia on Coast to Coast AM. Mr. Lobo is the host of the late-night movie program called Cinema Insomnia, which is a cult sensation for more than 13 years, and he's been on the program before. He has got this exciting persona about him when it has to do with talking about horror films and, you know, the genre of movies, and let's bring him back. You know, it's almost Halloween, and it's time to have some fun. Mr. Lobo, welcome back.
It's so wonderful to be back, George. I am so in the spirit of Halloween. I am pouring myself a spooky concoction. I'm going to mix 2% and whole milk, George, and I'm going to drink it live on the air.
No, don't do it, Mr. Lobo. Don't do it. We need you every year, but you haven't been here in a while. What have you been up to, Eric?
Always Mr. Lobo, always Mr. Lobo. But my friends call me, even my mom calls me Mr. Lobo now. But
no more Mr. E, huh?
Mystery. I like that. I like that. Well, you know, I've been getting some gardening in, and I've been, you know, washing the dog, and no, actually, I've been still, of course, hosting horror movies. We're still syndicated on AMG TV affiliate stations. We're on the Roku box, which I don't know if you know about Roku.
Oh, but, I've got them all over the place.
Okay, well, we're on a channel called Zombie TV, and we will soon be on other Roku channels as well. We're starting to make in theater announcements for Alamo Draft House Cinemas. I'm doing a countless number of convention appearances, film festivals. I'm the MC of Blobfest. Have you ever heard of Blobfest?
I've never been to one.
Blobfest is in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And it is the town where they filmed the movie The Blob. And just like in Rocky in Philadelphia, they want to run up and down the steps. And in Phoenixville, everybody wants to run out of the theater to escape from The Blob. And so they have a big event every year where the whole audience gets up and runs out the theater. And there's a street fair and classic cars and double features with The Blob. And it's a wonderful event. And I host it every year. And Monster Bash is a big convention for me. I've got some feature films that I'm in. I'm in the remake of Plan 9 from Outer Space. I'm also in a film called Midnight Show, which is a bunch of grindhouse movie trailers with a wraparound story. So things have been pretty...
You're busy.
Pretty busy. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. And, you know, this is a great time of year. I love October. And I love the season because it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. It's just a great last 3-4 months. Well,
are you wearing your costume, George? You wearing your clown costume like you usually do?
You know I hate clowns, Mr. Now I'll never get any sleep later. What is it about people?
You.
Why do people want to be scared?
People want to be scared. I think there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of psychology. You know, I don't think there's just one reason why people like to be scared. But I think the main thing is in horror, especially with horror films, I think that one is just escapism. I think that we get to focus our energy on something that we can control, you know, a danger that is safe, you know. And I think there are two kinds of horror movies. I think they're both roller coasters. One kind of roller coaster, you get off and you kiss the ground because you're so glad to be that it's over and you're back on terra firma, and those are the more intense horror movies. And the other kind of roller coaster are the more fun horror movies, which is the roller coaster where you get off and you get back in line again because you want to get on that same roller coaster all over again. And so I think that, you know, I think that that's a big part of it. Is I think it's a controllable fear. And I think that that's a lot better than worrying about Ebola and giant glasses of milk chasing you down the street.
It's healthy. It's a healthy scare, isn't it?
It is. I think it's interesting because people have this idea that horror fanatics are violent. You know, they had this film in the 50s, The Seduction of the Innocent, where they were trying to ban all the horror cartoons. And they always have the horror fan as a guy in a leather jacket stabbing a tree with a switchblade. And horror fans, and I'm gonna blow the secret right here, horror fans are indoor kids. Horror fans are in the chess club. You know, horror fans are the guys who can't climb the rope in gym class. Those are the horror fans. You know, they're not the guys ripping people's heads off and throwing themselves in front of trains. Those are like stockbrokers and doctors. Horror fans are mild-mannered, by and large, sweet, good, salt-of-the-earth, backbone of America kind of folk.
And it seems to be growing, isn't it? That field of horror in movies, low-budget movies. People
it is. Horror is one of those genres that always make money, and you know, and I think because of that, it doesn't get a lot of respect. But it is growing, and it's growing into new markets. You know, where everyone's looking to make money, and you can see the genre. Sometimes horror movies are for kids. I think in the 40s and 50s they were for kids. I think in the 60s they were for teenagers in the drive-ins who were making out. I think in the 70s they were kind of like for college, you know, age where people were trying to shock find the greatest amount of shock value to sort of dare their friends. I think in the 80s it was fun. It was almost for kids again. And I think now, which is really exciting, is that, you know, the last frontier of people who have control over the money are young girls. So you have, you know, everything is kind of geared toward young girls, it seems. It seems like you've got a Monster High, Dolls, you've got Twilight, you've got, you know, even science fiction properties like Doctor Who is being made safe for 16-year-old girls. So I think it's just, you know, they're spending their money. The boys are all off to video games, and the girls are still spending the money or controlling the dollars as to where the movie dollars anyway. And I think you know, you go to these horror conventions now. It used to be I hate to use the term sausage fest, but you know, there was mostly guys, and now you go to horror conventions and it's guys and girls. So the market has increased by 50% in my lifetime.
Well, it sure has. And you know, when we were youngsters, you know, we had in our local television stations, there was always some kind of a guest host who did horror movie introductions. And you know, in Detroit growing up, Mr. Lobo, I had Sir Graves Ghastly. And
oh,
then my favorite buddy, my favorite Mr. It was Dr. Morgus. Do you remember him?
He was Morgus. I certainly have heard him on your program, and then there was a movie that Dr. Morgus, Wacky
That's
World
right.
of Dr. Morgus,
which guy.
I believe I think the Nutty Professor ripped him off. I think
you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
But he is a legend. You were lucky to have two legends. Morgus is a legend in my industry, and also Sir Graves Ghastly is another legend who was also syndicated in many other markets, including Virginia.
He used to come out of a coffin and, you know, and start his introductions, and then he'd go back into it.
Coffins, that's usually what you do. You stagger out of a coffin and then you know, you make your introductions and, you know, a lot of corny jokes and, you know, rubber chickens and, all that good stuff. And, you know, I think that there are still, horror hosts. You know, Sven Gulli is enjoying, I think, probably his on MeTV affiliates. There's Sven Gulli, who used to be the best kept secret in Chicago, but now because of his affiliation with MeTV, people are enjoying him coast to coast. Elvira is still hosting horror movies. She's on Hulu right now, hosting Charles Band movies. So it's kind of you know, they're still around. They're under the floorboards. They're lurking, but horror hosts still walk among us. And Mr. Lobo is still in syndication and still doing my program. And it's interesting. Some people treat you like you're dead. You know, you're at a convention and they look at all your DVDs and stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it's just too bad they don't do this sort of thing anymore." And it's like, "Hello, I'm right here.
Haven't died. I'm still here." Has technology, that being internet television, satellites, more cable, has that helped the little horror genre survive?
I think so. I think so. I think it's allowed more different kinds of genres to survive because, you know, the horror host is kind of more in the fun kind of genre of horror stuff. And, you know, there are a lot of people who grew up as fans of this who are able to do their own shows for YouTube or make their own movies. I mean, you know, you look at a movie like Plan 9 from Outer Space, you know, you can make that movie, you know, on a camera the size of your thumb and better quality, you know. So
that's right.
If anyone who's got the desire to contribute to the pageantry of low budget horror films, you know, they can just go for it. And there is the only big problem is distribution, and which is weird because, I mean, on the one hand, anyone can see it, but on the other hand, it's hard to get people to know you're out there. So it becomes a problem of, you know, if you do create the better mousetrap, it's making sure people know where it is and trying to drive eyeballs to it. So
some of the low budget movies like Blair Witch, these horror films,
right, found footage,
just exploded. Now they had marketing money behind them, but the initial investment to make the movies was nothing. I think like $15,000 or something like that.
Right.
How are those so successful?
Paranormal activity and the like, yes.
How did they pick up? Well, how did they explode being so low budget?
I think in that case with Blair Witch, I think they and someone could correct me, but I think
hold on for a second, Mr. Lobo. We've been talking so much, the break's already here, but we'll be back with more. Mr. Lobo, 2 hours tonight on Coast to Coast AM, plus you'll get a chance to talk with him about some scary movies next hour. Welcome back, Mr. Lobo with us. Want to have some fun? His website is cinemainsomnia.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So, Mr. Lobo, we were talking about some of these low-budget films and how they can become so successful. What happens? I mean, does Social Network fuel it? How does it get? How do these films get to be so successful?
I think in the case of, and I could be wrong, the case of Blair Witch, I think they were bought by Sony or something, and then they put an outrageous amount of promotion dollars into it. So I guess your best bet is that if you can make a movie on the cheap, and then someone sees the potential in it, as a distributor sees the potential in it, then they can put big money into the distribution of it. But sometimes, if you're lucky, you can make a low budget movie and it can go viral. You know, people put films on the internet and, you know, they've been seen by, you know, millions and millions of people. And there are people with films on the YouTubes who make thousands and thousands of dollars because it,
sure.
You know, those ad revenues add up, and you know, so it is exciting in that way, to where if something catches the popular imagination, whatever Scary Puppy 3 in your backyard can be the next big thing. But I think for the most part, the big ones like Paranormal Activity and Blair Witch are in those cases, I think they had a major distributor and you know, people who saw the potential in it, who said, you know what, we could sell this, and then bought it. And then it's like flipping a house. They bought it and then they sold it. And then you've got runaway success.
Have you seen the YouTube videos of a young man who has lost his lower extremities, and he somehow had a artwork sketch made up, and then they turned it into some real life looking gook, and they attached it to his body, so it looks like his intestines are coming out and everything, and they had a clown. And they put this kid in an underground parking lot garage, and the clown was there with a saw, and the kid's there, and he has no legs, but he had phony body parts sticking out of him, you know, with the intestines about 6 feet long and blood looking, and so, you know, the clown's there with his saw, and people would come out of an elevator to go to their cars, and they'd see this clown, and then the clown would start chasing these people, or the kid without the legs would crawl to them saying, help me, help me.
Wow.
And these people are running and screaming and everything. And one, I'm saying, what a great gag. But two, isn't that dangerous for those people? Because what if one of those guys coming off an elevator has a gun? He's not going to think twice, you know, if he's got a concealed weapons permit or something. He's going to shoot that clown, isn't he?
I think about that often. I have not seen the one that you've talked about, George, although I may go find it after the show. But, I have seen similar ones where, you know, someone's pretending to be a monster or a psychopath or a ghost, and they jump out at people in real situations and scare the living daylights out of them coming out of an elevator or in a public place. And I hope it doesn't happen, but I think that that trend will start ending fast. If someone gets seriously hurt by a victim of a prank who happens to have a concealed weapon or a not concealed, you know, some places you don't have to conceal it. I'm not a big fan of the sort of the reality based stuff, although that's kind of, I guess that always could have happened on candid camera years ago. But I just think that, I kind of miss things that are actually have actors and are crafted and are written. And
I agree, because that skit, the clown skit with the sawed off young man, that's dangerous fun.
It's a great gag. And, you know, in a lot of cases, and I don't know if this is true, but, you know, hopefully the joke's on everyone. I mean, you know, sometimes they make videos like that and they really aren't normal bystanders who see these things. It's all a plant, you know. It's all people who are pretending to be average people who were scared, and you know. So you know, I mean, William Castle used to do that, where he would show a movie like The Tingler and said that he had the seats in the auditorium are getting have electric shocks shocking the audience. And, you know, a couple of people would act like they're getting shocked. Well, those people were planted in the audience. They didn't really put electricity into the chairs, but just having 2-3 people react as if they're getting shocked made the whole audience scream. And, you know, maybe a lot of these internet videos, just like reality shows, most of the reality shows on TV are staged. You know, maybe a lot of these particularly dangerous real viral videos with these pranks are maybe some of the more dangerous ones might be staged as well.
I think so. What are some of your favorite classic horror movies?
I think in the classic, now the classic scale, I would say, you know, is the main, in the 30s, I think, was kind of the golden age of the horror films, and into the 40s. But I think my favorite of those type of the classic monsters would be Son of Frankenstein.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that Bela Lugosi is awesome as Igor. I think the whole sulfur pit and everything is really amazing. I think that Karloff as Frankenstein is particularly amazing in that. I just think that it's really different. I like that one of the original Frankensteins. I love The Invisible Man. I think that's an incredible role.
Great movie.
And I think that it's you know, it's all carried by that voice, you know. Even the moon is afraid of me. You know, and it's so over the Claude Rains does such a remarkable performance on his voice alone. It's creepy. It's got great atmosphere. I would say in the Silver Age in the 50s, going into there was a particular director, Jack Arnold, who did a string of films that I'm very fond of. He did the original Creature from the Black Lagoon, and he did Outer Space in 3D. And he did The Incredible Shrinking Man, which I think is a wonderful metaphor for anyone who feels like they're losing their identity. And a remarkable film with a lot of atmosphere. And those three in the 50s, I think, he made many others, but I think those...
There was a classic called Them, I remember, about giant ants. Mm-hmm. Would you consider that a horror movie? Would you consider that a horror movie?
I think so, and this is the reasoning. You know, in the 50s, we kind of had a witch hunt where, you know, horror was kind of a bad word, and I think science fiction became the okay thing. You know, I think that calling something science fiction was kind of like a more socially acceptable kind of genre. You know, it was a new genre at that time for film, and I think that a lot of the horror films of the late 50s and the early 60s were disguised as science fiction films, and certainly a film like Them is designed to scare you. Those ants, those giant ants, aren't there to do anything else but give you a thrill.
That's right. Did these movies go through some kind of chronology? You know, as we've seen patterns of cult movies and trends, did they have a trend in those days?
Oh, yes. Yes, many trends. Because when Them was happening, Tarantula was happening, and
copycat
were,
films.
You know, the beginning of the end, which was giant locusts. There, you know, so it was giant spiders and giant locusts and giant, you know, giant.
Godzilla was out then, I think.
Big. Yeah, Godzilla was a different trend, but Godzilla certainly happened in the 50s, which was an import from Japan, which again a symbol of the atomic bomb. And Japan's relationship with America, and there's a lot of that first Godzilla film is actually very dark and heavy, and then by the 60s, it had become a genre of itself, and you had monster battles with Mothra and Rodan and King Ghidorah, the three-headed dragon, and on and on and on. And so you know, at a certain point, what starts off as being dark and scary at a certain point becomes so familiar that you've got these monster rallies with all the giant monsters fighting each other, and they did the same thing in the 30s with the classic monsters. By the time we got to the 40s, it was, you know, House of Frankenstein, where you had all the monsters. You had Wolfman and Dracula and Frankenstein all in the same movie.
Well, those things were so hot, too, at the time, and I've talked about this before, Mr. Lobo, but Aurora came out with those little plastic models of Frankenstein. Remember those?
Oh,
Creature
yeah.
of the Black Lagoon, Werewolf, all of them. I wish I still kept them. Those things are selling for on eBay now for a fortune.
Yeah, I can't afford them anymore, but a lot of them they've reissued. So, you know, it's sometimes you can, if you're lucky, if at a toy store, you can... If they're not all girls' toys, which most of them are now, but
that's true.
The girls are spending their money and the boys aren't. But
the girls have
there
it.
Are some, there are reprints of those models, and they're wonderful.
Where do you go next, Mr. Logo? I mean, what's next for you? You've done almost everything you've wanted to do in this genre, but what's next?
Well, I'm actually going to hang myself after the show.
Oh, don't do that! No.
I think films. I actually think I'm like I said, I've got this role in Plan 9 and Midnight Show, and I'm very proud of both of those projects, and I'd like to start producing I'd like to actually do like a William Castle type horror film and travel with it. I think that would be really fun to combine the stage show with the feature film. I want to continue doing Cinema Insomnia for as long as people will let me. I think Creature Features should never die. I think that there should always be a guy on Saturday nights presenting a horror movie, and I will always keep that aspect of my life going, even if I end up making movies or end up, you know, because, you know, I might make movies and they might, you know, people might not like them. But I do, you know, I've been doing my show for 14 years now, and I can do this. But I do love movies, and I think anything connected to movies will be part of my life.
What does Mr. Lobo do on Halloween night?
Well, usually I'm working. You know, when I lived in California, I usually had gigs lined up where I would be, you know, I'd be at a haunt, or I would be at a film festival, or I would be married. I've married several couples on Halloween night, but I've just moved to the East Coast, and I'm living in Pennsylvania now,
okay.
And I'm actually not booked for the first time in a long time on Halloween, and I am going to be handing out candy to the local kids, and I'm going to really enjoy it.
Are you going to be dressed in costume?
I will be dressed as Mr. Lobo.
No, you look that way for real, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. But I think some of them are disappointed that I'm not dressed as Mr. Lobo. So I have to be, you know, that's the downside of being Mr. Lobo is on Halloween, you're expected to be Mr. Lobo. It's like being Santa. You know, you don't want to see.
That's right.
You don't want to see Santa dressed. You don't want to see Santa in a sweatshirt and flip flops on Christmas. He's got to be in his outfit.
We started talking about clowns. I am not a fan of clowns. I don't know why. You know, I liked them when I was a kid, but something happened to me later on in my life, I guess, and I just don't like them. Why are so many people just scared of clowns? Is it because of people like John Wayne Gacy? Is it you know, things like that? Is it
wow.
The Stephen King's It?
Yeah. It's hard to know what's cause and what's effect. I think that clowns are a primal scare. I think a lot of us were, you know, even though I think most people who dress as clowns are trying to entertain children, I think when you're very small, it's overwhelming, just like meeting Santa Claus can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's an early scare. I think the first time you see a clown and you don't know how to process it, it's like, wait, this guy's sort of real, but he's sort of not. He's kind of a cartoon. You know, he doesn't talk, or, you know, maybe he talks weird, or maybe he's got balloons, but it, you know, I think that there's that aspect of it, and I do think part of it's fed by the genre. You do have movies like It and things that have come, you know, that have kind of worked on that primal fear of that early scare in our lives. But so now that's part of it. Now we've got scary clowns, you know, now we've got, and I also think that there is that unfortunate likelihood that someone could dress as a clown to luring a child or to
yes,
hurt
there's
a
no
child.
Question about that. Yes.
So I think that you know, the John Wayne Gacy aspect, I think that's the other aspect, is that, you know, I think that would be my take on that question.
American Horror Story, Freak Show. They've got this hideous clown who's a serial killer, and he's taking the world by storm. Have you had a chance to see him yet?
I have not seen this season of American Horror Story yet. The last season kind of disappointed me, so I it's going to be hard for me to get into this one.
Yeah, the first one was interesting, that haunted house, and then they had Asylum.
Asylum was okay. I liked Asylum. That was all right.
That was not bad. I got tired of listening to the song Dominique over and over again.
Yeah, but you know, the one with I can't remember. Anyway, the witch one, the coven one, that one I thought was not as
that was that was year three, right? Yeah, that was year
that
three.
Yeah, that was the third season, and this one, I saw the intro for American Horror Story, and they have a mechanical monkey in there that is sold at the Spirit Halloween store. And I thought, gosh, I thought they could do better than that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's a Mrs. Lobo, I understand, right?
There is.
Sort of?
Yes, there's been several.
And now the current Mrs. Lobo is working with you on a magazine, right? HorrorHostMagazine.com. Tell me about that.
Yes. We both love horror movie hosts and creature features and late night television. And, you know, that's what brought us together. And, you know, we both had been approached separately before we knew each other. Hey, there should be a magazine. There should be a magazine. And, of course, you know, there's not a lot of people making magazines anymore, but we were foolish, and we put out one issue of Horror Hosts and Creature Features, and we sold a good number of them, but it was hard to keep it going with advertising and all that, so we decided to turn it into a blog. So the Horror Hosts and Creature Features magazine is a blog, horrorhostmagazine.com, and we write about movies, we write about horror hosts, when the great horror host of Indiana, Sammy Terry, passed away, we did a big obit on him. There's a new group of guys in New York called the Ghoulikins, and we did a nice big story about them, and it's kind of our world, and it's just like the old monster magazines of the 60s, but on the internet.
That's exciting. You love doing what you're doing, I can tell.
Absolutely. I mean, who doesn't? I mean, who doesn't love monsters? Who doesn't love robots?
We all love monsters. We love them all. And when you do your work, do kids get scared, or do they seem to enjoy this?
Usually the kids that I meet. Now, I'm sure there are some that get real scared and don't want to meet Mr. Lobo. But the ones that I meet, always like, you know, they're always telling me how much they like these really scary things, and I always look at their parents and go, "You should be protecting them from me." Why does this 5-year-old like Freddy Krueger? Okay. But again, it's not for me to judge, but, you know, there are a lot of young horror fans, and they're drawn to it, and it activates their imagination. And it's nice because my clientele, my viewers, have been getting younger, and that, for me,
that's
is
good.
Exciting. Yeah, because, you know, when I started, it was all, you know, I was getting crayon drawings from 49-year-olds, and now I'm getting crayon drawings from 9-year-olds, and I like that.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back for another hour with Mr. Lobo, and we're going to take your phone calls. If you want to talk about the classic horror movies, let's do that. Also, some of your horror stories that you might want to share with Mr. Lobo. Up next, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and all his events that he makes appearances at are listed on his website at coasttocoastam.com. Click the link by Mr. Lobo's name. We'll be back.